on Friday, and I start having me a ball. Cause I got a good feeling, and I don't feel no pain at all. Friday's my day.
Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova N Radio Network. How you doing tonight? Thanks for stopping by. I hope you're going to stick around for a while, especially for the next hour. We will have Boku Sound from the David Addington, John Yoo. What do I want to say that won't that will get past the censors? The David Addington, John Yoo Q&A session before the House Judiciary Committee yesterday. I might as well just say it, you know, instead of trying to get slick. But we have some sound for you you're not going to believe. Robert Perry writing about it today at consortiumnews.com. And Perry, by the way, is one of the, if not the, most important journalists in this country. If you don't go to consortiumnews.com, you should. But he makes some good points that throughout the world, throughout history, the leaders, political leaders who have engaged in torture and other grotesque crimes that the state can, with impunity, commit against its citizens, most of those actions have been justified as necessary to protect their government or their people or themselves, right? Well, we had to do this. Now, Perry talks about the fact that it was true when England's King Edward I had William Wallace, you know, the Braveheart guy, the Scotsman, drawn and quartered in 1305 for resisting the takeover of Scotland by the British. And in fact, King George III was anticipating some gruesome deaths for the renegades in this country back in 1776 when they stood up to his abuses here in the colonies. And as Perry writes, kings and tyrants often inflicted special pain on people they viewed as challenging their authority. And when they did this, they wiped away the rules of justice. But the United States was supposed to be different. Indeed, Perry writes, reaction to tyrannical monarchs was what compelled the founders to establish a government of laws, not men, based on what they called unalienable rights for all mankind, including protection against arbitrary detention and the prohibition of cruel and unusual punishment, which is why it was stunning to watch the hearings yesterday before the House Judiciary Committee, as two representatives of Bush's presidency might as well have sat there and given the committee members questioning them the finger. The arrogance of these rat bastards. The absolute disdain. Perry writes, well, Vice President Dick Cheney's chief of staff, David Addington, treated the committee Democrats with haughty contempt. Former State Department lawyer John Yoo expressed the ultimate arrogance of power with his muddled responses and evasions of direct questions. Yoo, who authored some of the key legal opinions justifying torture, wouldn't even give a clear answer to the simple question of what atrocity might be beyond Bush's power to inflict. It was horrifying. And if ever two people needed to be dragged in chains before an international war crimes tribunal, it is these two. Probably even more so than Bush and Cheney. These two. The two enablers. The two filthy sons of bitches who absolutely stood up for the idea that the monarch can do no wrong. These guys behaved when they wrote the torture memos and wrote the excuses for the people who would carry out the torture. They behaved as though there were no laws except the laws they chose to write or they chose to acknowledge. These people are so far beyond the parameters of a legal society. They live in the outland somewhere, John Yoo and David Addington. truly. I couldn't mean this any more sincerely. If I opened a vein, these two, Addington and you, they need to go before a war crimes tribunal. They need to be brought to justice. Jesus, God, these two. If everyone else escapes, if Bush and Cheney and Libby and all of these people escape, and Rumsfeld and Powell and Rice and every one of these murderous bastards who for the past 7 years have used the United States as a base for their criminal activity, if they all escape, these two, Addington and you, not even the little pissant Karl Rove, forget him, flip him under a bus somewhere, but these two, Addington and you, in a different time, a different place, they would have been the ones standing on the tower with the carving tools eviscerating William Wallace. These two would have been. These two, they're not even Americans. These are scum. And why in the hell, David, you, as a reward, is a professor at the University of California, Berkeley? Shame on you people at Berkeley for allowing this murderous, torturous, law-disrespecting, criminal, outlaw, outlander, alien to teach at your university. My God. All that by way of saying, next hour we will play for you what these two filthy destroyers of the rule of law had to say to a duly constituted committee of the United States Congress. You and Addington more or less told them to go pound sand up their ass, that they were not going to answer anything they didn't feel like. As a matter of fact, not only did they make the case that Mr. Bush or anyone in Bush's power had the right to do anything he wanted to do to anyone at any time, they seemed to take pride, like licking their lips and sticking their tongues on their paws and rubbing behind their ears as they sat there. Yes, we did it. So what? The committee questioning them is totally irrelevant. Absolutely has no meaning whatsoever. They deigned to be there because it was a joke. A joke. Addington and you sitting there repeatedly giving elected representatives of the people the finger. I wish there was justice. We all know justice. Justice really doesn't exist in this country anymore. You know it as well as I do. Well, there may be the illusion of justice. If there is, there's two sorts. Justice for them, justice for us. Well, that's what brings a nation down eventually. You know it as well as I do. You cannot have two sets of rules for the people who live within that that society. But I swear to God, and I'm a total atheist, I swear to tree, I swear to earth, I swear to the moon, that these are the two, Addington who and you, who should be dragged in front of a tribunal and forced to answer for what they've done to this country and the rule of law. So, a little too intense? Wait till you hear what some of the comments I had. We'll be back. Stay with us. We're going to talk a little bit about this kissy face BS that occurred in where? Unity, New Hampshire? Oh, gag me with a ballot box. Ah! We can win a million pounds.
You know, I take great comfort in knowing that they don't know what they're talking about, because history takes a long time for it to reach. And there's no such thing as short-term history.
Oh, shut up. All right. It started. The day began with a kiss. Senator Barack Obama on the tarmac at Reagan Washington National Airport, Incorporated, whatever, reached out to shake Senator Hillary Clinton's hand and leaned down to kiss her cheek. It went on from there, wearing a tie that matched her suit. He put his hand on her back, guiding the way up the plane steps. "This way, my dear." They sat side by side for the flight up to Manchester, New Hampshire, chatting amiably. "Did you enjoy the trip to the lake last week?" "I did indeed. Oh, look out the window. Isn't that a lovely view? Oh, my. Is that Boston?" "I believe it is." They hopped on a souped-up bus for the 1.5-hour ride to Unity, New Hampshire. The honorary mayor of Unity introduced the pair, admitting that he was a Republican who voted for John McCain in the primary, but he didn't seem so sure about the general election. They walked on stage to the tune of "Beautiful Day," arms around each other's waists. "Hey, get a room!" They smiled and waved to the crowd. Every camera angle had Unity signs, big and little, in the backdrop. "She said she wants to help elect him president. He gave an ode to Hillary. She rocks." One woman stood at the back, periodically yelling, "Hillary for vice president, goddammit!" A few others, older women, stubbornly held up tattered "Hillary for president" placards. But the vast majority cheered her. "Thank you, Hillary!" And him. "Yes, we can!" As the dynamic duo glowed on stage, a Clinton staffer circulated through the press corps with word that Hillary and Bill Clinton had gone online to give the maximum contribution allowed by law to the Obama for President campaign. Stick that in your smoke and pipe it. It was the picture-perfect day of togetherness that Barack Obama had wanted. But you know what? It wasn't entirely believable. Oh, my God! I thought I was going to throw up today, and it's not the medicine I'm taking. It was watching this stuff. 3 weeks after suspending her campaign, Jeff Zeleny writes, the New York Times, Mrs. Clinton renewed her endorsement and pledged to do all she could to help Democrats win the White House in the fall. She said, "Unity is not only a beautiful place, it's a wonderful feeling, isn't it? I know what we start here in this field of unity will end on the steps of the Capitol when Barack Obama takes the oath of office." When they strode onto the outdoor stage, arm in arm, their messages complemented one another, as did his blue tie and her blue pantsuit. I'm sorry. Mrs. Clinton spoke first, with Mr. Obama sitting on a stool, his shirt sleeves rolled up. He listened intently and often led the applause at her remarks. Mr. Obama implored Mrs. Clinton's supporters to join the Democratic campaign. He praised the Clintons, saying, "I know how much we need both Bill and Hillary, Clinton, that's their last name, as a party and a country. She rocks, she rocks." The site, Unity, New Hampshire, was selected for the community's symbolic name, and the fact that both candidates, both, received 107 votes during the state's primary in January here in Unity. If the purpose of the day was to telegraph a unified Democratic Party, images of that message were plentiful throughout the day. So on a sultry summer day, with the aroma of grilled hamburgers and hot dogs in the air, the rally took on the trappings of a festival. A giant blue banner, "Unite for Change!" provided a backdrop against a meadow of trees.
A what?
Many of those in the crowd, who came from New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, and beyond, wore faded stickers of their favorite candidates. The pleasantries, though, belied a litany of extenuating issues between the two formal rivals.
Mrs. Clinton asked a Washington power broker lawyer, Robert Barnett, to help negotiate the talks, which include helping her repay her campaign debt
and securing a prominent spot at the party's summer convention.
Bah!
But none of those details were discussed, at least in public, today. Loves Hillary. Brock Hart Hillary. Hillary Hart Brock. Mwah. 25 before the hour, almost. Yeah, I don't understand. This was a big story, wasn't it, all day? Every time I turn on CNN to see how far the stock market was going in the toilet. And by the way, it's going to get much, much worse. That's what I've been hearing. Through the same sources you could hear it. So it's not like privileged sources, but it's going to be bad. But I kept switching into MSNBC and CNN today just to look at their ticker numbers and CNBC and so on and so forth. And every time I clicked in, I don't care what program it was, all this garbage about Hillary and Barack. What the hell is this? In the first place, this happens with alarming regularity, but this time it's really pissing me off. I've got several listeners who are sitting back right now going, well, we told you, Malloy. In the campaigns, the Democrats always appeal to the base. That would be us liberal lunatics who believe in certain inviolable truths. They appeal to us. The candidates do, don't they? During the campaign, I was absolutely shocked to hear Hillary Clinton talking to me, knowing full well that everything coming out of her mouth was a lie. She no more believed the things that she said on the campaign trail than she believed up is down, although that's beginning to seem possible. How do I know that? Well, because I looked at her voting record. Now, Barack Obama, on the other hand, I chose to suspend disbelief, kind of like going in to watch a play. The willing suspension of disbelief. Okay, I know there's six people on the stage and they're saying rehearsed lines and they're following specific blocking and yada, 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 but I'm going to suspend disbelief and pretend like I'm watching something real. I am. Wow. So that's what I did with Barack Obama. Now, all of a sudden, that he has secured the Democratic Party nomination. Yes, indeed. He has turned to the audience and pierced the fourth wall by saying, surprise, surprise, I'm really not liberal at all. Now, Republicans, on the other hand, during their campaigns, they also appeal to the fringe kook of their party, the kook fringe of their party,
Yes, we're going to eliminate abortion. Yes, we're going to kill all the queers. Yes, we're going to war for the next 100 years. Yes, we're going to unleash the oil companies. Yes, we're going to cut taxes for the wealthy. Yes, yeah, blah, blah, blah.
And then after they secure the nomination, they go even further to the right. I hate the Democrats. I hate the Democratic Party tacticians. There is a party in control of this country right now, and has been for the past 7 years. I'm sorry, the past 15 years. The Republican Party. They have done more damage in the past 15 years, arguably, than any political movement has done to this country in a similar time frame. Hell, in a 50-year period. These roach-like bastards have really done a number on the United States. George Bush's approval rating right now is in the 20s. The approval rating of the Republican Congress, and it is a Republican Congress, is in the teens. So at that particular moment in political history, one would expect, wouldn't one, that the Democratic nominee to be president would come out slashing and burning and saying, all right, the movement to fascism is over. Kind of like Howard Dean's scream. Remember? Wouldn't one think that the Democratic nominee for president would cut the crap and say, all right, here's what we're going to do, and lay out the liberal democratic agenda so that America could go, oh, thank God, you mean I'll be able to get health insurance? You mean I'll have a job? You mean my national parks and public grounds aren't going to be chock-a-block with oil derricks? You mean my ocean is going to be kept clean? Oh, my God. You mean the schools are going to get better? Oh, you mean equal rights for everybody? Gay, straight, black, white, Jew, Gentile, it doesn't matter? Is that what you mean? You mean we're going to join the rest of the civilized world and get rid of the death penalty? You mean we're going to have responsible gun registration laws so 30,000 people aren't killed every year? You mean we're going to have CAFE standards slammed on these goddamn automobile companies and force them to produce 40 miles to the gallon of not oil, not gasoline, but no, we don't have that at all, do we? You know what we've got? It appears that we've got the same old, same old. Are you ready? Are you ready for that? I mean, are you ready for that? See, I was talking to somebody today who was shocked that Barack Obama is turning out to be what he's turning out to be. And we talked about it for a couple of minutes. And I said to my friend, you know, here's the problem. Barack Obama was like a blank slate. Everybody talked about, well, he doesn't have any experience. He doesn't have a track record. Oh, he had a track record. But very few of us chose to look at his track record in Illinois politics. We looked instead at his very brief career in the U.S. Senate. And even there, there were some cracks. There were some things like, whoa, wait a minute, what is that? But Barack Obama was a blank slate. Is a blank slate. Upon which people who supported him could support him for whatever reason they chose to write on the slate. He's a liberal. He's a black man. He's got charisma. He's one of us. He's a Democrat. He's got charisma. Did I mention he's got charisma? He's Bobby Kennedy. No, Jack. It was so easy to do, wasn't it? Now, we knew about Hillary. Hillary does have a track record, several, as a matter of fact. I mean, Hillary Clinton We know more about Hillary Clinton probably than any other politician in the history of politics in this country. Huh? Wouldn't you agree? So in the conversation with my friend today, you know, we finally came to the conclusion that it might be time to see what kind of real estate deals are available in Greece, maybe, or Slovenia. Is there any place left on earth where, you know, you can buy a house for a reasonable amount of money? This is very upsetting, isn't it? Huh? Now, there's still the one chance in 10, 50, 100 that Barack Obama, like Earl Warren. Any of you remember Earl Warren, Republican governor of California? Way back in, I guess he was a governor in what, the 40s, 50s? And Eisenhower appointed him Supreme Court Justice, Chief Justice. And the Warren Court turned out to be one of the most liberal in the history of the country. And Earl Warren was supposed to be a conservative Republican. I can remember traveling through the South in the 60s, seeing, and actually late 50s and 60s, seeing billboards, "Impeach Earl Warren," put up by white citizens' councils, because Earl Warren had the absolute temerity to preside over decisions of the Supreme Court that said, guess what, colored folks and white folks are pretty much equal where it concerns things like, oh, I don't know, education, public accommodations, where they get to sit on the bus. Jesus Christ, get over it. So there's a slight chance, maybe, is there, that Barack Obama will turn out to be an Earl Warren? No? Okay, never mind. It was just a thought. But to watch this so-called unity thing today, and to watch the sickening, never-ending coverage, what the hell is wrong with television? If they don't have Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky, they've got Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. Oh, my God! No let-up. No end of it. It just went on and on. Unity, kissy face, unity, my ass. What are we talking about unity here? And as a symbolic gesture, Barack and Michelle contributed $2,300 apiece. That's $4,600 to retire Hillary Clinton's $20 million campaign debt. And in turn, Bill and Hillary Clinton turned around and contributed $2,300 apiece to Barack Obama's campaign. Oh, my God!
My heart, I give you the best of my love. Oh, 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 sweet darling, you get the best of my love. The best of my love. Love, love. Love, love.
It's by making the right choices, we can make the right choice for our future.
Can't be done. Nothing you can sing that can't be sung. Nothing you can say, but you can learn how to play the game. It's easy.
Oh, God. America's new sweetheart couple, huh? Don't you know that the deals, the backroom deals that were made, Barack and Hillary got together with Hillary's donor list before they made their unity appearance. And most of the Hillary donors, of course, are not tapped out, but because I mean, her donors have more money than Midas, but sort of Barack's for that matter. But the suggestion was made that they exchange donor lists. And, of course, Barack deep-sixed that real quick. But he got Hillary's. So you've got to imagine the kind of deal that went down behind closed doors to get these two up on stage together with their hand-holding and their ass-grabbing and their sweetie face and kissy-kiss and here, let me touch you there. Oh, no, not in public. Kind of thing that happened today. Can I sit next to you on the bus? Yes, you may. How about on the airplane? Okay, if I get the window seat. Now, what do you suppose all of this means? Nothing. It's more theater. God only knows what kind of a deal has been made for Hillary, because Hillary will not run for president again. If Barack Obama is elected, he will be reelected. Or he will figure out, as other politicians have figured out, how to make certain he's reelected. So Hillary is out of the race now. That's it. Unless she wants to run when she's 69, 70 years old. So what do you suppose is waiting for Hillary if she's a good girl and provides Barack, who is a very good boy, with her donor list and all of those 16 million votes? What do you suppose that the good girl and the good boy will work out as the visible deal for all of us out here in fantasy land to wrap our arms around and say, oh, damn, this is like Brad and Joel, what's her name? What's Brad Pitt's wife's name? Angelina, my God. So it was a toss-up for me. Which was more sickening, the theatrics of these two or the fawning coverage by America's crack news media? Huh? If you watched any of it today, you probably had the same gag reaction that I had. This is not news. Who are these two? Oh, I know. He is the presumptive Democratic nominee for president. She is the runner-up. Okay. But in the great scheme of things, who cares if these two unify? Do you? Which one of them honestly believes that this country is going to vote for four more years of the kind of treachery and disease and sickness and destruction we've had in this nation for the past nearly eight? Who believes that? Let me see some hands. Yeah, I know you, sir. Sit down. Shut up. Who believes that America wants more of this garbage? But there's Barack Obama sucking up to Hillary Clinton. There's Barack Obama sucking up to corporate America. There's Barack Obama sucking up to the so-called centrist vote. Sucking up to people he should be saying, get on the train, sucker, because it's pulling out of the station. Either come along or stay your ass back here in the Stone Age. But he's not doing that. I want the independents, he says. The independent voter. There is no such thing, Barack Obama, as an independent voter. Every voter in this country is ideologically driven. Get your head out of wherever you've got it and understand that. For Christ's sake, I'm a talk show host, and I could figure that out. Independence? Who would that be? Voters here in the South? Get real. Voters in the Rust Belt? No way. Up East? Ha! The Southwest? You're out of your mind. The West Coast? Big Sky Country? You think there are independents out here, Barack Obama? Why aren't you appealing to the Democratic Party ideals that you claim to represent because you are the presumptive nominee? Been listening to you for the past week or so, Senator, since you wrapped it up. And I'm a tad disappointed. Tad disappointed. I don't like what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing. And your little Stroke Fest with Hillary today just about tore it for me. Just about tore it. Now, it doesn't make any difference what tears it for me or what I think, you know. I'm just one potential voter. One potential voter. But I've got these questions, Senator. And they're eating at me. I can't figure it out. Hot damn, I was so excited. Because you were my chalkboard. And I could write anything on you I wanted to. And I did. And damn, am I starting to feel like a sucker. Oh well. Fool me once. Shame on something. Fool me. Won't get fooled again. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy on Nova M. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program on Nova M Radio. The first hour was sucked into a black hole of so-called unity between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and my personal feelings of disgust at the whole damn thing and also the turn that Barack Obama seems to be taking. If it's a turn at all, it was probably right in front of me all the time. I chose not to see it. But Reg writes in with a different point. She writes, Mike, in a perfect world or in a truly democratic republic, there would be little or far less political garbage than exists in the ugly reality in which we live. As it is, the road to the White House is paved with lies and betrayal. But it is one that has to be traveled with the artifice of smoke and mirrors by anyone with a chance to get there. In my heart of hearts, I know that everything is controlled and that it really does not matter who sits in the Oval Office. But with the only hope I have left, I have to believe that Obama has to get to the presidency somehow, and only then can we judge him. He has to play the game. He has to placate the hardline Hillary cadre and the church folks and the gun lovers and the capital punishment bedwetters. He has to. It's ugly, and it's dirty, and it's betrayal that seems unforgivable, but it's also a fact of life that he'll get nowhere without them. Americans don't know what they want. They follow the person with the best logo for the moment. They respond to the ads and the slogans and the gossip because they have no ideals, and they largely have no knowledge of what has happened to this country. Maybe, just maybe, if Obama can hype his way into the White House, there's a bit of hope. Only an iota, but just maybe. And then again, maybe not. Reg. Well, it's that last part there, Reg, that then again, maybe not. I mean, I understand the game. I really do. I understand the game. I understand it on a personal level, kind of. I made an attempt to run for the Georgia legislature about 12 years ago. And by the time I finished organizing the campaign and getting the permission of the Democratic Party in Georgia, I felt like I needed knee pads. And the campaign never got launched because finally at one point I turned to my campaign manager and said, this is absolute insanity. I'm out of here. And my campaign consultant said, but all you need in this district is 18,000 votes. You can get them. I said, get out of my way. I'm out of here. So I know. I know what you have to do to get elected to the Georgia legislature. I can't even imagine what you have to do to get elected president of the United States. But whatever it is, I still carry that inoperable, arcane, almost cute belief that in the situation that we're in this country right now, what we need is somebody who will stand up, declare himself or herself to be absolutely an unshakable liberal Democrat with everything that that represents, everything that that represents historically over the past 100 years. I am a liberal Democrat. This is what I believe in. This is what I will do once I am elected. These are the people I will put in my cabinet for these reasons. And that given the choice, I mean a clear-cut choice, that the American people would vote as people should for their own best self-interest. Not because they don't want the queers to get married. Not because they're war lovers. Not because they want to sleep with their guns. But because they suddenly realize, son of a bitch, the country is going into the toilet. It really is. Right in front of my eyes. But we don't have that kind of a politician. We don't have that kind of a leader. And I think the reason for it is because the inherent nature of an American is to be arrogant, a bully, and underneath it all, a coward. Sorry. I'm an American. You're an American. Arrogant, a bully, and underneath it all, a coward. Nah, I can't stand up for what I believe in. Nah, I've got to go to the middle. Nah, I can't say that. No, if I do, I'll lose the NASCAR vote. I'll lose the soccer mom vote. I'll lose the PTA vote. I'll lose the evangelical vote. I'll lose the Jewish vote. Oh, I can't do any of that. Well, a politician who does that, what does he or she stand for? What? Aha, you know the answer? Huh? Molly Ivan said it a long time ago. You got to dance with the people what brung you. Who brung Barack Obama to being the presumptive Democratic Party nominee? Who brung him? Huh? And who brung Hillary Clinton? So why should anyone really entertain the idea? That these people really, either one of them really speak to the problems and for the people. We've got problems. Oh my God. We have stuff that is going to take 20 years just to untangle, to figure out how to make sure it doesn't happen again. I mean, the Bush crime family and this filthy, degenerate Republican Party in the past 20 years, 25 years, has absolutely ruined the United States. Ruined it. Okay, the past 15 years. You want another example? The Bush crime family has placed a moratorium on new solar energy projects on public land until, you sitting down, until the feds can study the environmental impact. Right. Solar energy collectors, all projects put on hold, moratorium. This is going to take about 2 years. God damn it, now wait a minute. What are you putting out there in the desert on those public lands? Are those oil derricks? They're not? Well, what are they? Solar panels? Jesus Christ! Who told you could do that? The Bureau of Land Management says an extensive environmental study is needed to determine how large solar plants might affect millions of acres it oversees in Arizona, California, Colorado, Nevada, New Mexico, and Utah. We have to know. Hell, you might be squashing some bug out there that's right on the brink of extinction. This from the Bush crime family. Can you believe this? This decision to freeze these new solar proposals temporarily, you know, you have to apply for a permit to put your stuff out on public land, millions and millions and millions of acres of public land. Oil companies, coal companies, gas companies, son of a bitch, they don't have to wait, what, 5 minutes? Hey, I need it. You got it. Solar panel companies? Well, this is going to take a couple of years. The moratorium is causing widespread concern, it says here, in the alternative energy industry, as fledgling solar companies must wait now to see if they can realize their hopes of harnessing power from swaths of sun-baked public land, just as the demand for viable alternative energy is accelerating. Holly Gordon, Vice President for Legislative Regulatory Affairs for Austra, a solar thermal energy company in Palo Alto, California, said, "It doesn't make any sense." She says the Bureau of Land Management, that land has some of the best solar resources in the world. This could completely stunt the growth of the industry, end quote. Well, yes, Holly. Stunt the growth of the industry? No. They want to kill the solar energy. Look, the North Pole, the ice is gone. That means they can drill in open water, for God's sake. At the North Pole. So we have to stop issuing these permits for the collection of solar energy. We have to study what kind of an impact these things are going to have on desert rats and stuff, you know. And you better clean your water now. I have not for your cup.
I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully.
Yeah, you do, don't you? Now, getting back to this freeze all of a sudden, a moratorium on new solar projects on public land that the Bush crime family has ordered through the Bureau of Land Management until it studies their environmental impact. Can you imagine the Bush crime family studying an environmental impact on anything? Well, yes, on solar energy projects. Why? Because it might do bad things to the gas, oil, and coal industry. There are 119 million surface acres, I have discovered, of federally administered land in the West that is ideal for solar energy. Particularly in Arizona, Nevada, and Southern California. Now, moved by the national demand for clean energy development and the fact that most of us want to continue living on this planet, solar companies have filed more than 130 proposals with the Bureau of Land Management since 2005. These proposals center on the company's desire to lease public land to build solar plants and then sell the energy to utilities. Sounds communistic, doesn't it? Huh? Unless you're an oil company. If you're an oil company, it's free enterprise. If you're a solar company, wait a minute. Public land? Then sell it to utility. Wait a minute. Now, all of these requests, these proposals, involve two types, I've discovered, of solar plants. Concentrating and photovoltaic. Concentrating solar plants use mirrors to direct sunlight toward a synthetic fluid, which powers a steam turbine that produces electricity. It's so simple! photovoltaic plants use solar panels to convert sunlight into electrical energy.
That's even simpler. Oh, Christ.
Now, there's been a lot of progress made in the development of both types here in the past few years. Both of these techniques have grown in the past couple of years. Now, the manager of the Bureau of Land Management's Environmental Impact Study, someone named Linda Resigui, said that many factors must be considered when deciding whether to allow solar projects on the scale being proposed. Among them, the impact of construction and transmission lines on native vegetation and wildlife. Oh, really, Linda? How about if I'm ExxonMobil? How about if I'm some great big goddamn coal company, huh? I can blow the top off a mountain, anytime I want to, if I'm a coal company. I can pollute the entire coast of Alaska and get away with it, if I'm an oil company. But if I'm a solar energy company, oh, damn. Well, we got to study here whether or not this is going to interfere with the sex life of desert bugs. You know, you tree huggers have been screaming about this for the past 30 years. Guess what? Ha ha. Now we're going to put it back on you. Mrs. Resigui said that reclamation is another big issue. She says these plants potentially have a 20 to 30 year lifespan. How to restore that land is a big question for us. Is it really, Linda? Is it really a big question? How do you put the tops back on the mountains in West Virginia? How do you take all the crap and the junk that comes out of open pit mining in Minnesota and Colorado and all over the goddamn country? How do you put that back? And why haven't you done it? You got to watch out for these solar companies. Whoa, Lordy. Now, solar proponents, solar energy proponents, people, you know, people that have these business people, they agree. They agree for an environmental study. But they believe that the freeze, the moratorium, is totally unwarranted and unnecessary. Now, here's the kicker to the story. The solar industry is already concerned over the fate of federal solar investment tax credits, which are set to expire at the end of this year unless Congress renews them. Do you hear me? Now, the moratorium that the Bush crime family is putting in place, combined with an end to tax credits, means a double blow to an industry that just might save us. But it's not oil, it's not gas, and it's not coal. So here's something to file away and watch closely. What is going to happen in the Democratic-controlled Congress, and it will be Democratic Party-controlled, at the end of this year, when tax credits to the solar energy industry run out? Are they going to be renewed to keep this fledgling industry going? Is the new president going to order the Bureau of Land Management to get its goddamn hands off of the solar power industry? Craig Cox, who's the executive director of the InterWest Energy Alliance, a renewable energy trade group, said he worried that the freeze would throw a monkey wrench into the solar energy industry at precisely the wrong time. That's right, Craig. That's right. A monkey wrench.
Even Bob Geldof looks alarmingly thin. I got to get on that shuttle, get me out of this place. But there's gonna be warfare up there in outer space. It's been a hard day on the planet. How much is it all worth? It's getting harder to understand it. Things are tough all over on Earth.
Yeah.
The dream in solar energy is to develop technology so that someday your house is like a little generating plant. It's possible to capture the sun, feed it into your house. I think that's a pretty interesting idea.
Okay, as promised, Darth Cheney henchman David Addington, Cheney's chief of staff, and this disgusting John Yoo, former Deputy Assistant Attorney General, appeared before the House Judiciary Committee, Addington under subpoena, Yoo, I don't know why he was there. Yoo seemed dazed and confused and refused to answer most of the questions because he said the Justice Department told him not to. That would be Michael Mukasey, the ones that the Democrats in Congress and the Senate confirmed as the Attorney General. Addington, who was there under subpoena, was noticeably more alert and more hostile. He's almost as evil as his boss, Deadeye Dick. So we'll start with John Conyers, the chairman of the committee, asking John Yoo about his previous assertion a few years ago that the giggling killer, President Chucklenuts, has the right to order the torture of a detainee's child in front of the detainee, even up to and including crushing the child's testicles. Yoo didn't have an answer this time.
A public debate, it was reported you were asked if the president could order that a suspect's child be tortured in gruesome fashion, and you responded that I think it depends on why the president thinks he needs to do that. Is that accurate?
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe it's accurate because it took what I said out of context. The quote stopped right before I continued to explain a number of things, which I appreciate the opportunity to do.
So far what I read was accurate, but there was more.
It stopped like mid-sentence. So I didn't get to finish. I mean, I finished the sentence during the debate, but I didn't get a chance to.
Thank you.
Chairman Conyers, he didn't answer your question. Why didn't you say, not thank you, but answer me, you evil son of a bitch? Answer me. Conyers then asked John Yoo if there was anything Bush could order done to a detainee that would be illegal. Is there anything that would be illegal? You again stammered with his response.
Is there anything, Mr. Professor Yoo, that the president could not order to be done to a suspect if he believed it necessary for national defense?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that goes back to the quote you just read, because...
No, I'm just asking you the question. Maybe it doesn't, but what do you think?
I think it's the same question that I was asked.
Well, what's the answer?
First, can I make clear I'm not talking about...
And you don't have to make anything clear. Just answer the question, counsel.
I just want to make sure I'm not saying anything.
You don't have to worry about not saying... Just answer the question.
Okay. My thinking right now...
Yes, right now.
Okay. My thinking right now...
This moment.
Yes, this moment, Mr. Chairman, is that, first, the question you're posing...
What is the answer?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not trying to make you... Let me answer the question. I will answer the question.
No, you're wasting my time. Look, counsel, we've all practiced law. Hold it. Could the president order a suspect buried alive?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that I have ever...
I'm asking you that.
...given the advice that the president could bury somebody alive.
I didn't ask you if you ever gave him advice. I asked you, do you think the president could order a suspect buried alive?
Mr. Chairman, my view right now is that I don't think a president would... No American president would ever have to order that or feel it necessary to order that.
I think we understand the games that are being played.
Chairman Conyers, he didn't answer any of your questions. Why do you move on? Why don't you stop the hearings and say, you little rat bastard, answer me? You can do that. You're the chairman. If he gets up and leaves, you can have him jailed. Conyers then questions this scum-sucking David Addington about his use of the term unitary executive, which Addison now pretends he knows nothing about. Addington, what am I saying? Addington pretends he knows nothing about the term unitary executive, even though he himself justified Bush's use of torture by quoting the unitary executive provision in the U.S. Constitution.
Do you feel that the unitary theory of the executive allows the president to do things over and above the stated law of the land?
The Constitution binds all of us, Congressman, the president, all of you as members of Congress, all of the federal judges. We all take an oath to support and defend it. I frankly don't know what you mean by unitary theory of government. I don't have...
Have you ever heard of that theory before?
Oh, I have. I've seen it in the newspapers all the time.
Do you support it?
I don't know what it is.
You don't know what it is.
And it's always described as something Addington's the great, you know, advocator of. Now, let me tell you where I've used the word unitary. In quoting OLC opinions, in drafting signing statements. And you will find OLC opinions that refer to the unitary executive branch. And by that, they simply mean...
I don't need you to interpret to me what other people have used.
No. I'm answering your question.
You're telling me you don't know what the unitary theory means.
I don't know what you mean by it. No, Mr.
You don't know what I mean
or
by
anyone
it.
Anyone else.
Do you know what you mean by it?
I know exactly what I mean by it. And
well,
I,
what
I,
do
only
you mean?
Sentences.
Tell me.
The use of the word unitary by me has been in the context of unitary executive branch. And all that refers to is, I think it's the first sentence of Article 2 of the Constitution, which says all of the executive power is vested in a president of the United States. One president, all of the executive power, not some of it, not part of it, not the parts Congress doesn't want to exercise itself. That's all it refers to.
Oh, my God. Then Representative Keith Ellison, the Muslim, Democrat of Minnesota, questions John Yoo directly about his involvement in drafting the so-called torture memo. Yoo has a cloudy memory on that one, then claims the Justice Department told him, oh no, don't answer that question.
Mr. Yoo, you wrote the Bybee memo of August 2002. Is that right?
Mr. Ellison, as I described in the opening...
I need a yes or no, sir.
I did not write it by myself.
Did you write it at any part?
I contributed to the drafting of it.
Okay, so you contributed to a drafting of it. What percentage of the drafting did you write?
It's difficult for me to...
And you checked in with Addington about what you were going to cover? He said you did.
Were you talking about the August 2002 memo.
Of course. Did you check in with Addington as you just said you did?
I unfortunately do not have the same guidance as Mr. Addington does because the Justice Department has told me I'm not allowed to talk about any individuals. I'm only allowed to talk about...
Was Mr. Addington telling the truth when he said you checked in with him over what you were going to cover?
Let me describe it.
I know. I want you to say yes or no.
I gave the draft of the opinion to the White House counsel's office, which would be...
So when he just said you came in to tell us what he's going to cover, you cannot confirm that. Is that right?
No, I'm not saying that at all, Mr.
Well, answer my question. Yes or no.
And so it's up to the White House counsel to decide who within the White
House... Stop, sir. I'm asking you to tell me to confirm whether what Mr. Addington reported to this committee was right or not right. That's simple.
Mr. Ellison, I'm afraid I have to follow the guidance provided by the Justice Department on this question.
So confirm what Addington said, deny what Addington said, or say I cannot answer the question. And what privilege are you asserting?
I can't answer the question because of the instruction by the Justice Department.
Thank you.
I'm not allowed to
Thank
discuss.
You.
But, Representative Ellison, why didn't you turn to the chairman and ask for whatever privileges you people grant each other and say to John Yoo, you're a lying son of a bitch. You will answer my question or I will have you jailed. Why didn't you say that, Representative Ellison? Why do you sit there and let these subhuman, weaselly, scum-sucking destroyers of your country, Mr. Ellison, sit there and do what they're doing? So if your answer is because John Yoo was not there under subpoena, then why didn't your committee chair issue subpoenas so that these filthy, disgusting criminals could not weasel out of an answer? Chairman Conyers, why wasn't John Yoo under subpoena the same as Addington? Did you swear him in? Did they take an oath to tell the truth and nothing but the truth? More of this garbage when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy.
I heard the girls are sweeter there. Meet me in Guantanamo. We'll have a water board to share. Meet me in Guantanamo. Where the stubborns will get
I've reminded the Prime Minister, the American people, Mr. Prime Minister, over the past months that it was not always a given that the United States and America would have a close relationship.
Oh, Christ. 10 before the hour, back to the gruesome twosome today as they displayed the arrogance and the mumbo-jumbo that these filthy Bush crime family has dumped on the American people for the past 7.5 years. David Addington, Cheney's chief executioner, and John Yoo, the chief torture memo writer, appearing before House Judiciary Committee chaired by John Conyers. Representative Keith Ellison then asked John Yoo if he implemented the directions of the torture memo. And you pretended he didn't understand the word implemented.
At some point, this 2002 memo was implemented. Is that right?
What do you mean by implemented, sir?
You contributed to the writing of the 2002 memo. Is that right?
Yes, I do.
The name on the memo was Bybee, but you contributed to the memo, right?
Yes, sir.
The memo was implemented at some point. Is that right?
What do you mean by implemented, sir?
What I mean by implemented is the guidance that was set forth in that legal memorandum was followed and put into action. Do you understand what I mean by implemented now, sir?
So you're asking me, was the
I
memo
just told
followed?
You.
Was the memo followed? By
I'm not going to get into semantical games with you in this 5 minutes. I need you to answer the question or refuse to. Is the memo implemented?
The memo was signed. And provide.
I know what sign means, and so do you. Stop wasting my time, Mr. Yoo.
I'm not trying to, sir.
Was the memo followed? Will you accept followed?
I don't have personal knowledge about how it was followed, but I expect.
I didn't ask you about how. I asked you whether it was followed, sir.
Sir, you're asking me about things that other people would have done, not me.
So the fact is, so the memo was never put into effect. Is that? Are you making that claim?
No, sir. Let me go back and refer to my opening statement.
Forget it.
But Representative Ellison, the rat bastard sitting in front of you, didn't answer you. He didn't answer whether or not his declaration of torture being legal was ever implemented. Representative Ellison, why didn't you come down from your chair and beat his ass into the ground? Just beat him up. Why didn't you do that? Why didn't you just go down there, grab him by his necktie, drag him across the witness table, and pound the living hell out of him? Why didn't you do just, I mean, that would have been the lead story all over the world. Huh? Muslim grabs college professor, beats him bloody. Oh, my God. Oh. Maybe that's why you didn't do it. Gerald Nadler from New York then asked Addington his opinion of Yu's assertion that it would be proper and legal to torture a detainee's child to force a confession. You got to hear Addington's response to believe it. I'm surprised he didn't just leap out of his chair and spit on Nadler.
Mr. Addington, Mr. Yu, Professor Yu was quoted as saying that under certain circumstances it would be proper and legal to torture a detainee's child to get necessary information. Do you agree with that?
I don't agree or disagree with it, Mr. Chairman. I don't plan to address it. You're seeking a legal opinion, and as we told you in Exhibit 4, I'm not here to render legal advice to your committee. You do have attorneys of your own to give you legal advice.
What? He just said he wouldn't give me an opinion.
What? Representative Nadler. He, this little rat scum bastard, was there under subpoena. Why didn't you jail him? Why don't you waterboard him? Why don't you find out if he has children and bring them into the witness room and say, now, goddammit, let me re-ask the question. Oh, I understand. Now, when we come back, we have questions from Representative Debbie Schwartz Wasserman, Representative Robert Scott, and then we'll finish up with a couple of questions from Representative Stephen Cohen. So stick around if we got time to crowd in one more. No, I don't think so. All right. It's just astonishing. This is what Robert Perry was writing about today. At consortiumnews.com, the absolute, astonishing, unbelievable arrogance of these tyrants, these pigs, who sit there in front of the people's representative trying to get information. Addington and you someday will die and their remains will rot someplace in some cemetery. But we... this country will have to live for how long with the consequences of their actions? And these arrogant thugs sit there and talk to members of Congress who, I have to admit, seem to be as wimpy as possible. Oh, they answer me. Give me the answer. You're not answering. Answer me. Answer me. Until finally they say, okay, never mind. Oh, God, I wish I was on that panel to question these people with the power of subpoena and an iron bar. Answer the question, Mr. Addington, or I will kill you.
I don't have to answer that question. Are you threatening me, Congressman Malloy?
Yes. We'll be back after the break. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
back, 7 past the hour, the Molloy Show on NOVAM Radio. All right, let's wrap this up. These two criminals, two war criminals, two people who have done everything they can to destroy the U.S. Constitution, to destroy the rule of law in this country, David Addington, Dick Cheney's number one butt boy, and John Yoo, who, when he was doing his damage, was the Deputy Assistant Attorney General, when he wrote all the torture memos saying, well, under Ashcroft, I think this is going to be good. Now, I will make it legal for you to make all these tortures. And is now a professor at UC Berkeley. Unbelievable. So let's get back into this steamy, disgusting event today. We go to Representative Debbie Schwartz Wasserman now, asking the foul David Addington about what torture methods he discussed or observed on any of his many trips to visit Gitmo. He went down there to visit. For Christ's sake, most of us go to Florida. Some of us go to France. This sick son of a bitch goes to a torture chamber. Think about it. Addington didn't recall anything. When she replied that she found that hard to believe, he got really snotty and started suggesting different ways she could phrase her questions.
What generally prompted your trips to Guantanamo Bay when you
made
them?
I was invited by the Department of Defense to go and accepted. I thought it would be good to go and see what they were doing to implement the decisions made in January and February at the White House to have detainees held there by the Department of Defense.
On any of the trips, did you discuss interrogation methods that were directly referenced in the memo that we've been discussing here at this hearing?
I'm not sure I remember this memo having methods discussed in it.
Did you discuss specific types of interrogation methods that interrogators should use while at Guantanamo Bay on the detainees?
I don't recall doing that, no.
That means you didn't, or you don't recall doing it?
It means I don't recall doing it, as I said.
Well, it's hard to fathom that you would not have a recollection on specific conversations about types of interrogation methods as opposed to just generally talking about interrogation.
Is there a question pending, ma'am?
The question is, I don't believe that you don't recall whether you discussed specific interrogation methods. So I'll ask you again. Did you discuss specific interrogation methods on any of your trips to Guantanamo Bay with people who would be administering the interrogation?
And as I said to you, I don't recall. Let me be clear to you that there are two different things that may be helpful to you in asking your questions. The Department of Defense, interrogation,
CIA program. My question. Well,
it's astonishing. It's beyond belief. Representative Robert Scott, Democrat of Virginia, is next. He asked John Yoo about military training in torture techniques. How do we train the military to torture? You wouldn't answer. He said the Justice Department, that's Michael Mukasey, confirmed by Democrats, told him not to.
Let me see if we can get a quick answer to the question, because there was much discussion of military training techniques at the Senate Armed Services Committee last week. These are called the SEER techniques, S-E-R-E, Survival, Evasion, Resistance, and Escape. Mr. Yoo, did you ever discuss or get information about that program as you prepared the August 1st, 2002 memorandum?
Mr. Scott, I'm afraid the Justice Department has instructed me that I can't answer questions of that nature.
See, this is why you people are sending me the emails telling me I'm out of my mind about the Democrats. This is why I so strongly disagree with you. Democrats put Alito on the Supreme Court. Democrats put Walker on the John Roberts on the Supreme Court. Democrats put Michael Mukasey in as Attorney General. Do you understand that? Do some of you people who have the attitude of Molloy's rocking the boat again, Molloy's going after the Democrats again, oh Jesus Christ, what's wrong with Molloy? Don't you understand what the Democrats have allowed to happen? I mean, do you? The torture boy is sitting here and he's been instructed not to answer questions to the Democrats when it was the Democrats who confirmed Mukasey as Attorney General. Do you not see anything odd about that?
And it's Democrats who've taken impeachment off the table.
Now let's go to Representative Stephen Cohen, Democrat from Tennessee. And this first question, he's asking you if there's any limit to the torture the president is allowed to order. Because you had suggested the only thing important was the intention of the torturer. Do you understand that? So it was okay to rip out somebody's fingernails if the torturer was not a sadist and doing it out of malice, but instead tearing out somebody's fingernails or breaking their wrists in the interest of national security. How sick is that? But anyway, Nadler interrupts Stephen Cohen because you, yet again, refuses to answer the question directly. Listen to how pouty and petulant and like a little bitch he sounds at the end of this clip.
Are you saying that the law states it's not how the person that's being tortured is receiving the treatment, but how the intent of the person who's torturing? So if I want to take somebody's fingernails out, if I think it's for the good of the country, that's not torture. If I want to cut somebody's appendage off, it's okay as long as I think it's important for the country.
Sir, the memo does not say that. The memo quotes federal cases that cite this as one amongst many factors that courts consider when they try to determine what shocks
the country. Let me ask you this. Is there anything you think that the president cannot order in the terms of interrogation of these prisoners in a state of war?
So, sir, you're asking my opinion now. Those questions are not addressed in those memos. They were not before us. Today, I would say there's a number of things a president, I don't think any American president would order in order to protect the national security, and I think one of those things is the torture of detainees. I do not believe, and I've said so many times, that the president... I don't think the president, or I say, should ever.
The gentleman yield for a second?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Yu, this is the second time today, or the third, that you've said that you don't believe an American president would order a certain heinous act. Now, the question is not would an American president order such terrible things, but could he legally do
sir,
so?
I mean, sir, I told you I don't agree with that because you were trying to put words in my mouth about attempting to get me to answer some broad question covering all circumstances, and I can't do that. I don't agree with the way you're characterizing my answer.
Oh, my God. Finally, for us anyway, Representative Stephen Cohen asks Addington, to settle the matter once and for all, which branch of government Dick Cheney belongs to? Seems we've been right about this bastard all along. He's not human. He's some kind of leech or vampire or blood drinker or something that attaches to different government bodies to feed as he sees fit.
Let me ask Mr. Addington, what branch of government is the vice president's office
in? Mr. Chairman.
Sir, perhaps the best that can be said is that the vice president belongs neither to the executive nor to the legislative branch.
And his consent. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Addington, what branch are we in?
Sir, perhaps the best that can be said is that the vice president belongs neither to the executive nor to the legislative branch, but is attached by the Constitution to the latter. Close quote. That's from two legal opinions issued by the Office of Legal Counsel of the Department of Justice, dated March 9, 1961,
So he's a member of the legislative branch?
No, I said attached by the Constitution to the latter. He is not a member of the legislative branch because the Constitution says that the Congress consists of a Senate and a House of Representatives. The Constitution further says that the Senate consists of senators and the House of Representatives consists of representatives, and he is neither a senator nor a
representative. But he's attached to the legislative branch?
That's the quote I read you.
So he's kind of a barnacle.
You know, he is attached. The word was attached by the Constitution to the latter. I don't consider the Constitution a barnacle, Mr. Cohen.
No, the vice president, since he's really not fish nor fowl, he just attached to something.
It's not it's not exclusive in the Constitution to have that situation.
The time of the gentleman has
expired. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, the time of the gentleman has expired. Now, there's so much more of this. Where's this whole C-SPAN.org?
If you want to put yourself through it, you can go to cspan.org. We only had 10 cuts for you tonight with a total of about 14 minutes. This went on for several hours today. And if ever you doubted, you know, you hear some liberal talk show hosts bat around the word fascist, corporatist, fascist state. And you think to yourself, oh, for Christ's sake, these, you know, these Malloy and these other people are just so just wacko. Go listen to the entire thing if you want to see the extent to which the Bush crime family has said the Constitution no longer applies. It no longer applies. Now, what would you call that?
And you could have it all. My empire of dirt. I will let you down. I will make you.
He's in the jailhouse now.
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 I feel very comfortable in the job because I've got great advice and advisors to whom I get good advice from great advisors to whom I listen.
Do you have any doubt any longer who's been in charge of this degenerate crime family for the past 7.5 years? Do you have any doubt? Do you think it's this little twit, George W. Bush? I remember back in the day when they were trying to decide who was going to be Bush's running mate. And somebody told Bush to say, well, I've chosen Dick Cheney to lead my search committee. And then Dick Cheney found himself and found Rumsfeld and found all these Nazi pigs. And they gathered around George Bush like flies around a dung heap and fed him all the nice, sweet words they knew that it would take to control him. You're going to be the president. You went to Yale. You were in Skull and Bones. Your dad was president. Now you're going to be president. What do you think of that, Junior? Oh, wow. Can I still ride my bike? Yes. Yes. You're going to be president, and we're going to be your advisors, and we'll take care of everything. Well, I'm not too smart to be president. That's okay. We'll take care of everything. Now go out and tell people that you've got good advisors. Go out and tell people that you've got nice advisors who are going to make sure that everything runs smoothly. Okay, now get out there. Go ahead, say it.
I feel very comfortable in the job because I've got great advice and advisors to whom I get good advice from great advisors to whom I listen.
Ah, you overdid it there just a little bit, dipstick. Whoops. You overdid it there just a little bit, but good enough. Now, for the next 8 years, that's all you have to do. We'll take care of everything. Everything. Wars? You can be a war president. Torture? You can stand up and defend America. Destroy the banking system? You can help out your friends in the hedge fund business. On and on and on. Now go be a good little president. That's what's been happening here. That's what's been happening here. My God. I'm coming to your phone calls. Just one email here. Pray 2 writes, Mike, it's normal after a big drop in the stock market that the next day it will bounce back with a substantial gain. Today's good news was that it only ended down another 100 points. International business magazines are telling their readers to expect the slide to accelerate with the Federal Reserve raising interest rates on a monthly basis to control wage inflation. That means higher unemployment and more people in desperate straits. Have you opened your electric bill yet? You want to turn off the lights and unplug your radio when you do? Many people are finding that their bills have doubled because of fuel cost adjustments. The Bush crime family's response to this is to freeze hundreds of solar power projects on federal land while environmental impact studies are done, delaying already approved leases for at least 2 years. The good news is the Bush crime family is finally interested in the environment. Not that there's any rush to deal with global warming, but scientists studying the Arctic ice are giving 50-50 odds that the North Pole will be ice-free this summer. 5 years ago, it was considered alarmist to say this could happen in the next century. Closer to home, it's been raining in Iowa again, sending more water down the already swollen Mississippi, thanks to 12 years of a Republican Congress. After the 1993 flood, only half of the levees are at risk of failing today. Of course, that's because the other half have already failed in the past month. The good news about global warming? It will lead to a proliferation of yummy, yummy flies. Let's do some phone calls. As soon as we come back from this rapidly approaching break. Is it here yet? If you'd like to join in the final half hour of the program tonight, the number is 800-989-1480. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
At the headlines, just to kind of get a flavor for what's moving. Rarely read the stories. Best way to get the news is from objective sources. And most objective sources I have are people on my staff who tell me what's happening in the world.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed, chuckle nuts. It is 25 before the hour. Regarding what Addington said about dancing around the issue of whether or not the vice president is in the executive or legislative branch, a lot of people have wondered where that came from, including moi. And Addington referred to a 1961 decision, executive decision. Well, Prairie 2 has opened the door for us. The memo in 1961... was for Lyndon Johnson, who was then Kennedy's vice president. And the memo was written so that Kennedy could put Johnson in charge of the space program, because vice presidents couldn't be in charge of anything under the Constitution. So that's the memo that the half-wit Addington was referring to. Now, the Republicans made a great big stink about Al Gore, the same way, even though George Herbert Walker Bush claimed he was running the government, not Reagan, but him, right up until the Iran-Contra grand jury. And then, all of a sudden, all George Herbert Walker Bush had ever done was go to funerals. So that's what the reference to the 1961 memo was all about, where it was decided that the vice president was attached to the legislative branch. But the Republicans, you see, since they are scavengers, since they are eaters of the dead, they go back 50 years and find something, anything, a phrase, a word. They hire little wormy-like Republican young Americans for freedom out of college, and they give them records, presidential records going back decades, and they say, now, worms, go to work. Find something we can use. And the worms go to work. And they come up with something from 1961 about the space program. And they say, aha, here, here, quick, take this to Cheney. He'll love us for this. He'll give us fresh food tonight for finding this one. And then you get some creepy, disgusting bastard like Addington and you. And they look at this and they go, oh, yeah, well, here, let's twist it. Okay, now, there we go. Now, that protects Cheney. He's not part of the executive branch. He's attached to the legislative. But he's not really part of the legislative. He's the vice president. This will drive the Democrats crazy. And, of course, the Democrats go for it. They go crazy. Instead of grabbing some of these punks by the lapels and shaking them so hard, their waterboarding equipment falls out of their backpacks, and just say, you sons of bitches, this is the United States of America. It is a nation of laws. You're going to answer questions. You're going to start behaving. Why not? Why not? These thugs are going around the world butchering people. These bastards are going around the world dropping white phosphorus on children. These people are going around the world torturing people. Why can't somebody in the Congress, a Democrat, grab one of these rat bastards by the lapels and threaten to smash his head through the wall if he doesn't answer a question, or grow up, or stop destroying our country? It doesn't belong to these Republican vermin. All they want to do is destroy it. Listen to their own words, if you doubt that. But to hear the Democrats sitting there being browbeat by scum like this, by putrid scum like Addington and you, questions that need to be answered, and these two guys sit there and just give them the finger over and over and over again. Marion Myrtle Beach writes in, Mike, I watched that fiasco with you and Addington. They all used the Condoleezza Rice practice of stall and evade in presenting a non-answer. It's a technique she has perfected. Were these two subpoenaed? No, just the one. If so, why can't they be held in contempt for non-answer answers? Well, that's kind of technical. Representative Nadler scolded them for evasiveness. The saddest thing to see was Representative Conyers thanking them at the end of the hearing for being there. He should have tased them both instead of kissing their butts. Why do Democrats constantly turn the other cheek and bend over backwards? What does Bush have on these timid people? Well, I have the same questions, Mary. I don't get it. You know, in desperate times, desperate actions are called for. You know, a lot of people just get their bloomers in a wad because of the attitude I adopt on this program. You know, the attitude of, ow, he just goes, oh, he's just, I want to listen to somebody who's not so confrontational. Well, you know, screw you, okay? The nation is going down the toilet. The Constitution is being destroyed right in front of your faces. And some of you people are going to sit back on your well-padded asses and pretend like a talk show host who gets pissed off and says he's pissed off on the radio is somehow upsetting your little apple cart. Oh, poor babies. Poor babies. You people are part of the problem. Never the solution. Never. Never. So sit back and watch your life disappear. To your phone calls, Jan is calling from Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the mic. Jan, welcome to the program.
I'm with you.
I'll say it again.
I said I'm with you on this.
Oh, well, good.
I was having a discussion with, oh, by the way, there's a Frontline documentary, and you can actually watch it online, that goes in depth with John Yoo and David Addington.
Really?
It's called Cheney's Law. And it's really revealing. And there's also, additionally on the webpage, interviews with people who have worked with both of them. So you get sort of an idea of what kind of people they are and how they operate.
You know, only the Republicans could produce thugs like this and put them in positions of this kind of power. Only the Republican Party could do it.
Yes, yes. In one of the interviews, they talked about Addington walks around with a copy of the Constitution in his pocket, and that his primary role has been, as a lawyer for Bush, has been not to say, no, you can't do that, there's no law. His primary function is to say, yes, and we can do it this way.
Right, right. He's a weasel.
He's a weasel, yeah. He's the ultimate weasel. God. But I was discussing exactly what you're talking about earlier yesterday at work with somebody, and I said, I think it was Jonathan Alter was quoted as saying when people were objecting to the fact that Obama had voted for this lousy FISA bill,
mm-hmm.
Jonathan Alter's reply to this was, well, he's a political animal and politics is the art of the possible. And I argued with my friend at work and said, you know, politics is not the art of the possible. It's the art of the probably not. I mean, we have been subjected to this rolling over by Democrats and Republicans both.
Mm-hmm.
And it has steadily for the last 8 years eroded our Constitution. This is exactly what you've been talking about. Our country is going to hell and people aren't paying attention. And I said, it's time that we have politicians, you know, who will stand up to these people, who will be brave enough to speak about what is right, and constituency be damned. I mean, you know, and you also mentioned earlier, you know, offending the soccer mom. This is the thing. If 60% of your district elects you,
mm-hmm.
and 30% of them are ticked off at you for something, go to your power base. If the 60% want you to go for it, go
right.
for it.
Right.
And the other little thing, too, is, you know, maybe it's time we have a Mr. Smith goes to Washington. Maybe I'm a little too idealistic, but we need some people with courage who will stand up to these thugs because they're not doing it. I don't want to say that. There are certain people, like my Senator Russ Feingold, does stand up and say no.
Oh yeah, there are some Democrats in Congress, in both the House and the Senate, who are making a valiant effort, but the vast majority of them do not. And you know, in a way, that's almost understandable because politicians have devolved into these kind of squirmy, weaselly characters. But I'll tell you what really gets me, Jan, are the American citizens who either know about this and don't care,
yes.
or treat the political scene as some kind of a college football game. Well, I'm going to cheer for the Republicans. I hope the Republicans just kick the Democrats' ass, not realizing that these idiots who see it that way are kicking away their own lives. And that's the part. How did so many Americans become so incredibly, excruciatingly stupid? That's the question I can never answer. Yeah, I just got to leave it there, Jan. We're out of time. All right, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
President has got to go. He's got to go. We want our country back. We're going to get it. Want to show him the door. Chemicals and nukes, you know, they never did appear. Yellow, orange, and red, just to keep us in fear. Said, hey, yeah, President has got to go. Well, he liked to work.
For the hour, thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program tonight. Our technical director is Billy Foster. Ben Birch is the podcast manager. Sharon Gordy, Bridget Wolf, and Bob Alexander all contribute mightily to the program. Catherine Bay is our executive producer. If I haven't mentioned it lately, become a Nova N founding member. You get free downloads and podcasts when you want them. All kinds of extra goodies coming your way soon. Plus, the Malloy swag is now available. We've got three or four, I'm not sure, four videos up. So check them out. You have to be a Nova M founding member. And any suggestions you have about the videos, let us know. They all run about 3 minutes. Send me an email. Quickly back to your calls. John in California listening on the internet. Hey, John.
Hey, Mike. That thing really made me angry listening to it. And none of the mainstream news mentioned it, at least the 15 minutes or so I saw. But we've all seen this coming for a long time, and these Republicans are way out of control. They don't bite their tongues or anything. They're just running roughshod. And that's been making me think for a while now that I think basically they see the Democrats as just the people without the power. I mean, our jobs start going overseas, what was it, about 15 years ago? So they see the Democrats as not the ones with the fat pockets, generally. But one other thing is I don't see any of the left-wing talk show hosts, except you, sort of, and one other guy, ever talking about this change, and a lot of Democrats feeling like gun control really isn't the way to go. Because, I mean, if you have a populace that's not only economically down on the bottom, but also unarmed, I mean, why the hell should they answer your questions? That's basically, I want to put that forth to you. And
Wait, I'm not completely understanding that, John. Say it again.
The right wing, basically, as you hear a lot of them say, at least I have over the years, that, well, ha, 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 we're the ones with the guns.
Right.
In other words, a lot of Democrats feel like, well, we shouldn't have guns. We should all be unarmed. Not all of us, but
right,
a lot of them do. And I don't hear too many of the left saying,
oh,
wait a minute. You know, a lot of societies have gotten into trouble because the populace was totally unarmed. So,
right, right. Well, I understand that. And I hate the fact that I live in a country like the United States where guns are so easily available. I hate it. It disgusts me. It makes me realize I live in a primitive, savage society. And since I do live in a primitive, savage society and have had my life threatened enough times to make me understand viscerally that I live in a primitive, savage society full of right-wing morons and maniacs, that's one of the reasons I'm armed and have a permit to carry a weapon with me wherever I go, at least in the state of Georgia.
Good.
So I wish that I didn't live in a society as primitive and savage as this one. But as long as these right-wingers are crawling around, cowards all, threatening people who are have a different skin color or a different sexual orientation or a different religious belief or no religious belief, as long as these scum are around, and they'll be around for a long time, Mike Malloy will be fully armed and able to take care of himself. But I hate the fact that I live in such a savage, backward society. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, but that's my point, but not just you. I'm saying that more people should take that take on
it. Oh, I know.
More people should come to that realization,
right,
that as long as one side has all the guns, when it really gets down to it, when push comes to shove, that side is the one that's going to get kicked to the curb. That's basically my point.
Well, I hear what you got to say. John, thank you. I appreciate it. It's a shame that we have to look at it that way. There was a time in this country that I don't know when it was. Maybe never. Maybe this is more of the myth. All right, let's pretend it's a myth. The mythology of this country is that one time we were all on the same side. We're all working towards the same goal. Oh, Jesus, that is a myth, isn't it? Well, let's keep pretending. And in that time, you know, Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, Jew, Gentile, gay, straight, black, white, didn't make any difference. Everybody's working toward... It really is a myth, isn't it? Everybody was working towards the same goal, you know, freedom, democracy, a decent government, decent jobs, a decent way to raise our kids. And then what happened? Well, I'll tell you what happened. The rise of the right wing. Every time you have a society, you have this rise of fascism. There's something about fascism that is so appealing to cowards and bullies. The uniforms, the weapons, the absolute authority, the all the devices that they can hide their cowardice behind.
Marching up and down the street.
But send some other kid, family's kids, off to fight your oil wars. I believe with all my heart and soul that what has brought the country to the point it's at right now are right-wingers, the conservatives, these ultra-nutball Republicans who have done everything in their power and continue to do it to destroy the basic concept of this country, the Constitution. And they won't stop because they're sick and they're fascists. So, I don't know. It's a shame that it's come to that. It's a real shame because some of us who have children and grandchildren that we have no choice but to turn them loose into this filthy mess that these right-wingers have created. You know, it poses a problem. So some of us will continue to struggle. But to the right-wingers, I just have to tell you, you make me sick to my stomach. I'll see you Monday night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.